Are you ready to unlock a secret to youthful vitality? Meet MitoPure, the revolutionary Urolithin A supplement from Timeline Nutrition. MitoPure ignites your body's natural anti-aging pathway, mitophagy. As we age, our cells can become damaged and dysfunctional. But with MitoPure, you can recycle these worn-out cells. MitoPure is a clinically validated solution backed by over 15 years of robust scientific research. Boost your cellular energy, enhance muscle strength and endurance, and even fight skin aging, all without changing your diet or exercise routine. I discovered MitoPure a couple of years ago after diving into the science of Urolithin A. Since then, it's become a vital part of my wellness routine. For more information and to order, visit timeline.com/Hoffman. Use code Hoffman at checkout to receive 10% off MitoPure. Whether you're looking to support muscle health, enhance your skin routine, or invest in your long-term vitality, MitoPure is your scientifically backed ally in the quest for slowing down the aging process. That's timeline.com/Hoffman for MitoPure. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And by the time you listen to this, it's going to be appropriate to wish you all a very happy holiday season, a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, whatever you're celebrating this time of year. We want to extend a greeting. So, Layla, what's our next question?
We've got a question from Anne. What's a standardization in a supplement mean? I've noticed, for example, in olive leaf extract, a 500 milligram dose, the amount of oleopein, did I say that right?
Oleoropein. Yep.
Can vary. It's reported as 6% all the way up to 20% standardizations.
Uh-huh.
And some brands will state that the standardized amount, and other brands, in addition, will also calculate the exact amount. Why does the amount vary? And why does the reporting on any label differ? For example, I've also noticed on a 250 milligram dose, standardized at 40%, and at 500 milligrams, standardized at 20%, may yield the same 100 milligrams of oleoropein.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so in the old days...
Should I be concerned, she's asking, should I be concerned? As long as I'm getting the 100 milligram. Yeah.
Right. Well, in the old days, and I'm old enough to remember this, is the way you got herbs is you'd go to the health food store and there would be a jar. And, you know, you'd ask the tie-dyed wearing employee there, you know, with long hair, you know, where's the olive leaf extract, or, you know, more typically, since that wasn't that popular then, where's the green tea, you know, where's the turmeric, because we hadn't extracted the standardized ingredient curcumin from the turmeric. You know, you just get an herb and you place it in a plastic baggie, or maybe you'd buy some that were already encapsulated, and you just, or maybe you'd make a tea, you know, you make a tea out of it, you know, like the old fashioned way, or maybe you buy a bottle that had a tincture, right?
Yes.
You know, you take a dropper and you put that in your tea, or you'd put that in the back of your throat, and that's how you got your herbs. And then they came out with this notion, and it's kind of borrowed from the pharmaceutical industry, is that, you know, we can look at white oak bark. White oak bark contains salicylic acid. So white oak bark, you know, you can take it and it will alleviate pain. You know, sometimes you see in old movies, you know, people break a leg or something, they give them a tea, you know, and it's, you know, the wise woman of the village knows that this is going to have some beneficial effect. You know, maybe they're gathering, you know, poppy berries or poppy flowers or something like that. But you just never knew how much of an active ingredient you had there. So then with the advent of technology, they came up with this thing called gas chromatography, where they could analyze all the compounds within a different herbs. And these different compounds appear as a spike in a gas chromatography. It's kind of like a graph that has ups and downs. And the spike at a certain level indicates it's the signature of an active ingredient. And how big that spike is denotes how much is in what's the concentration in that ingredient. And then they came out with ways that they could purify it. So that's kind of like what the pharmaceutical industry did with white oak bark. They actually came up with the idea there is this active ingredient, and they ended up synthesizing it called aspirin, right? Actually, one of the first patent drugs, pharmaceutical drugs. The inventor was a guy named Hoffman for a company that is called Bayer, which did pretty well.
Yeah.
Long-term.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of my ancestors. I do not receive royalties. So anyway, this is kind of the way that the herbal industry has advanced, is to standardized extracts, which is good because as this person points out, that, you know, you could buy a weak version of olive leaf that's standardized to 10% all European, and the pill is 500 milligrams. But you could also get a 20% all European in a smaller capsule, 250 milligrams, and it's equivalent. Or you could get a 500 milligram and 20, that's superior. So with standardization, we have now a basis of comparison. What it used to be like, hey, you know, I don't know, this is how potent is this? And that's what we should be looking for in our herbal extracts, standardization. By the way, I just read that they just came out with a 40% oleuropein, which is an even higher percentage. And by the way, oleuropein has some very interesting properties. It actually has some estrogenic effects, so it may be helpful for women in menopause. It's demonstrated to enhance bone density, so that's kind of a cool thing. And
it's good for blood sugar, for blood pressure.
It may be part of the secret of the Mediterranean diet, you know, all this very beneficial compound, heart healthy and so on. So, you know, it's a great thing, but you could also get standardization of your turmeric extracts, which are standardized to curcumin. You can get ginkgo biloba, which is standardized to what are called ginkgocides. You could get St. John's wort, which is standardized. Now you kind of know what you're getting, and that's a good thing.
So standardization really means that it provides a specific concentration of the compound.
Yes.
That's what standardization.
Yeah.
And by the way, coming back, only because you mentioned St. John's wort, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah.
St. John's wort interferes with so many medications. I almost never recommend it to anyone.
Yeah, you have to be careful with it. Although I think, you know, small amounts can be tolerated either, you know, without major interactions. I think when you're using like hundreds of milligrams, that's when you get into trouble.
Isn't it? So, and there you go. You want something good and reputable. And thank you for this question.
Yeah. And by the way, if you want more information, a good place to go is the ABC, the American Botanical Council, where they use really the most sophisticated scientific and botanical methods to characterize different herbal products. And the effort is to have an international standard for quality for herbal products. And people talk about this industry as being irresponsible. You never know what you're getting. There's no regulations and everything. Man, you look at what the ABC is doing and you get a whole different picture, because there's going to be a big debate about supplements in 2025, because the FDA is going to be challenged. They're going to say, oh, we need more purview over supplements. There's still congressional forces that are arrayed against the supplement industry, want to control it more, restrict our access to supplements. But the vast majority of big players are very responsible, and they are undertaking their own testing of the materials that they get to see if the materials meet the claim. In other words, they'll sell you like, okay, hey, this is 20% oleuropein. It's like, thank you. I'm going to trust but verify. I've got to do the testing myself. Right. And it requires very expensive equipment. And the big supplement companies have extensive laboratories where they look at every lot that they accept. And sometimes they come in big barrels, these raw materials, and they test the raw material to see if they are A, potent, if they meet the claim, and B, if they're free of contaminants, you know, because, you know, there might be high levels of, you know, whatever, lead, mercury, or, you know, glyphosate, or you name it.
Yeah. And ABC is the American Botanical Council, yes?
Yes, American Bot Health.
Okay. All right, Anne, thank you for that question. Let's see here. Joe is asking, does decaf coffee and green tea contain as much of the healthy components like polyphenols and minerals as caffeinated coffee and tea? Does the decaf process reduce the antioxidant benefits? I'm a longtime listener back to the WOR days and have followed the salad and salmon diet for 30 years. Thank you. Have learned so much from you, Dr. Hoffman.
Well, that's so great to hear, that because we've been around for a really long time. We are officially the longest running physician hosted radio program here in America, possibly the world. So got to keep on cranking.
Okay. So the decaffeination process, I think, Joe, that it has to do with if it's a natural process, a water process, decaffeination may impact those antioxidants far less than a chemical decaffeination process.
Right.
Which has some not nice byproducts.
You know, as we speak, I am drinking decaf, and I drink a lot of decaf. I may go through, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 cups of decaf. If it was caffeinated, I'd be like so on edge. I'd be like vibrating. So
you'd
like
the walls,
test.
Right?
Yeah, I'd like the taste of coffee, but you know, I'm sensitive to the caffeine, which is nice because I can use, because I'm naive to caffeine, I can use caffeine before, say, a race or maybe like a really long bike ride, you know, just to give me some oomph, or, you know, say I'm going to go for like, you know, 40 miles or something like that. I'll take a break and I'll say, oh, fine, you know, give me like, you know, a Diet Coke that has caffeine in it. You know, yeah, under those circumstances, I'm going to take in, you know, something that otherwise I would consider junk. So there's a couple ways to decaffeinate. One is with coffee, they mostly use methylene chloride, which is not great because there's probably some residual methylene chloride left in the decaffeinated coffee. That's cheap decaf. I usually get the Swiss water processed, and I got to tell you that, you know, I would hate to do a calculation of how much money I spend on Swiss water processed decaf, because if I did not spend that money, I would have probably at the end of, you know, a lifetime of consumption, I probably have like $1 million.
Wow.
Properly invested, you know how that works. It's like, if you save whatever, $5 a week for the rest of your life, you know, you could be a millionaire, you know, that kind of thing. So the question
is,
does
that... It's unfortunate that these natural decaffeination processes are so expensive.
They are, But, you know, it's for health reasons, I would prefer not to take in methylene chloride. So it's a really good question, and I don't know the answer. I surmise that there is some reduction in the beneficial polyphenols through that process. I can't imagine that it is a process that is just perfectly laser-like selective for the caffeine and does not vitiate some of the other compounds. And the reason I suspect that is because a lot of decaf tastes lousy. And when it doesn't taste good, that means they've driven out not just the caffeine, but also some of the flavor components, which are, the flavor is the signature for some of these beneficial polyphenols like caffeic acid, right? But my decaf, especially the way I make it like mud, tastes very much akin to regular coffee. So I'm fairly confident that I'm getting a lot of the benefit. Now, when it comes to tea, I don't know so much. I generally drink my tea caffeinated, because it is about a third as caffeinated as coffee. And I'm in the habit now of having a morning tea, a morning cup of tea. So just a little caffeine in the morning, and then I don't have to worry about whether it's been devitalized. I'm getting all the EGCG and the, you know, all the polyphenols.
Now, the benefit of green tea versus a black tea, which can be stronger, and if you drink enough of it, you can vibrate. I love a good strong cup of tea from time to time, but the benefit of green tea is the L-theanine, because black tea has less L-theanine. The green tea L-theanine can kind of attenuate the caffeine in there. So you feel it. I mean, anytime I go to a Japanese restaurant and I'll have the green tea, even if it's dinner time,
I never have trouble sleeping after that. Yes, exactly. Right.
No trouble at all with the green tea.
Yeah.
So Joe, you may be able to just drink the regular green tea, which you get the real benefit of EGCG there.
Here's where black tea varies from green tea. Green tea has EGCG, but I already take EGCG capsules. And, you know, maybe this is a good time to preview this. It's in a forthcoming Q&A with Layla podcast, because it's the holidays, we're going to take a little bit of a holiday hiatus. But on January 2nd, we're going to drop a special edition of Q&A with Layla, where we won't take questions. We want you to keep sending questions, and we'll take them later in January. But for that edition, we're going to comment on the supplements we take, Layla and I, which is, I think, a subject of some curiosity. And one of the supplements I take, so I'm already covered, is I take EGCG as a supplement. I take it as a encapsulated, standardized extract. It's standardized to its content of EGCG, which is the really premier compound delivered by green tea. Now, the nice thing about black tea is black tea has a lot of quercetin, and quercetin is a really cool thing. You know, quercetin has actually got a lot of health benefits, anti-allergy. I think
a lot more in oolong tea, because that's so particularly good for allergies.
Okay.
There might be more quercetin there.
Even oolong. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Specifically. Yeah.
Yeah. Quercetin is great for that. I love all the teas. I love Earl Grey, and you get the benefit of bergamot in there.
I have Earl Grey. I alternate Earl Grey and black tea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like English breakfast teas.
Scottish breakfast.
All of those, yeah. So, Joe, there you go. Okay, didn't mean to rhyme that, but you know what I mean. But thank you. Thank you for that very thoughtful question. Dr. Hoffman, I think it's a good time to take a break and hear from one of our sponsors.
Indeed, I think that is an excellent idea. So listen up, here goes. Whether you're a nutrition enthusiast or simply an individual looking to improve your well-being, check out this comprehensive new course from the American Nutrition Association, Getting Started with Personalized Nutrition. It's a self-paced one-hour course with video, reference sheets, and more, all with the goal of helping you harness the power of personalized nutrition. You'll learn how to optimize your energy levels, support your mental clarity, improve your GI function, enhance your physical performance, and maintain your metabolic health. The course is regularly $49, but as an Intelligent Medicine listener, you can get access to this vital content for just $29. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman. That's the ANA.org/Hoffman, and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the exclusive discount. The ANA believes personalized nutrition holds the greatest potential to solve the chronic disease epidemic. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the Harness the Power of Personalized Nutrition course.
Thanks for listening, and once again, a thank you to our sponsors who underwrite the cost of production of Q&A with Layla and all our other great podcasts throughout the week. And we want to wish you a very happy new year, all of you folks whose products we believe in, and therefore we share information about them to our listeners. So go ahead.
Okay. We've got an email from Michael. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm an 81-year-old male. I've had some issues with higher blood sugar in the past, not too high, but now I've got my hemoglobin A1C down to a 5.3.
That's good.
What I am concerned...
That's optimal, great. Age, yeah.
Yeah. What I am concerned about is my liver function tests have gone up. I have an AST of 60 and an ALT of 74.
Uh-huh.
What could be causing that? I'm taking an herb called white willow bark herb. I take chromium.
Well, you actually referenced that white willow. I misspoke earlier. I said white oak bark. White willow bark is the source of aspirin.
White willow bark.
Aspirin is not hepatotoxic. So that should not be the thing. I mean, white willow bark is an ingredient in Ache Action, which is a supplement that's a nice supplement that is has some ginger, which is anti-inflammatory, and some
boswellan,
and some white willow bark. So it's got some anti-inflammatory property. So that is not the cause of the problem, in my opinion. And I don't know what the cause of that is, but generally when you have an elevation in your liver function, it does require a little investigation by a doctor.
Yeah.
And there could be, the most common reason is when you have what's called metabolic syndrome, which is usually associated with, excess waist circumference and overweight, but is also associated with poor blood sugar control, which you seem to have improved. Can also be associated with high triglycerides, low HDL, high blood pressure, that whole metabolic syndrome. Though fatty liver, very common in America, the most common cause of elevations, but also it could be a medication you're taking. I don't know if you're taking any medication. Sounds like not. Other herbs sometimes can be a cause, but infrequently.
Mm-hmm.
I recently learned that high levels of exercise can actually cause a transient, temporary increase. So if you're like really having a very heavy workout the morning of your blood test, maybe you're going to see a uptick in your liver function tests.
And I would also encourage Michael to check some of his other supplements. Maybe a combination of several things might be providing too much vitamin A, retinol, or niacin,
for
example, or maybe some other herbs that in combination, maybe just a little bit too much or over a long period of time may have this impact. And certainly, any alcohol, if you're imbibing a lot or anything like that, that would certainly show up. But at any point, Dr. Hoppen, would you agree if there was any abnormality in a blood test, the first thing to do is to repeat the test?
Absolutely, because rather
Labs
than get hung
available.
Up on a single result and you're off to the races, I'm thinking of a recent Woody Allen film that I rewatched, Hannah's Sisters. And it's
Hannah and her sisters.
It's a great riff on hypochondriasis. And of course, Woody Allen is a world-class hypochondriac.
Oh my God. I'm going to get a brain tumor. Do I have a brain tumor?
Exactly. And it's just some schmutz or something on the test, he's so typically, he's completely off to the races. And, in a famous line in that movie, he says, I'm thinking of getting a gun and killing myself, but then I'd have to shoot my parents and all my other relatives, so I decided not.
Oh, my.
It's very Woody Allen. Very Woody Allen.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyhow. So, I don't remember how we got on this tangent.
Yeah, it's a tangent. But the tangent is never go completely bonkers over a single blood test result, especially if it's unexpected. It could be a mistake, and it bears repeating. And that's what we do in clinical practice. We say, we don't expect to see that. Let's repeat that test, and maybe don't work out that morning, or maybe take a few days off your supplements and see what happens.
And see what happens. Right. And I also want to mention to Michael, his numbers are AST and ALT 60 and 74. Michael, there's real reason for concern if it was 260 and 274.
Yeah. Well, the threshold is generally in the 40s. I think it's actually more optimal for people to have those numbers in the teens, because even people with maybe a 45 or 50 might have a little bit of some fatty infiltration of their liver or some liver stress due to some potential toxin, something going a little haywire in their body. But you know, don't start. Do not go to Google, and do not Google it.
Please don't.
You will not be happy with some of the alternatives that they present to you.
Yeah. But Michael, best of all,
that's called cyberchondria.
Cyberchondria. Yeah. Michael, best of health to you. We appreciate your questions.
And please give us a follow-up on that, because it's interesting to know what to see if that normalizes, or if something is found, what the verdict is on that.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's see. We've got an email from Paul. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, thank you for all the great insight. I'm a 70-year-old man. I exercise, I eat well, I take supplements. My blood calcium was high, a 10.6.
Uh-huh.
And an
That's not that high. That's not really rip-roaring
high.
Just
borderline, right?
Yeah, borderline.
But an ultrasound showed nodules on my parathyroid.
Right.
My symptoms are frequently fatigue and brain fog. Is there a holistic treatment or surgery the only option?
Okay, well, they taught us a mnemonic for hyperparathyroidism or hypercalcemia, which is bones, groans, moans, and stones. So if you have true, and I'm not sure that this person does have true hyperparathyroidism, because the calcium is borderline high. Normally what they do is they'll measure parathyroid hormone, which I don't know, maybe they've already done that, because that's the follow-up. And if it's sky high, then it's likely hyperparathyroidism, right? They also will look at not just your calcium, but what's called your ionized calcium, which is a correction for your albumin level, which can distort your calcium result. So it's a direct measure of calcium. And then a decision gets to be made. Are your high levels of calcium related to bones, moans, stones, and groans? Okay. Now, the mnemonic, bones means you can become osteoporotic with it. So get a bone density, right? Even though you're a male at 70, you should get it to see if this is causing accelerated bone loss. Stones, you can get kidney stones, calcium deposition in your kidneys because of high calcium. You can get moans, which are psychic moans, which are related to the brain effects of hypercalcemia, which they are considered as psychiatric or mood effects of high calcium, but not usually when it's 10.6, you know, maybe when it's, 11.8 or 12.1. And I forget what groans is for. Maybe one of our astute medical students can remind me what the groans is for, but I think maybe abdominal pain, because sometimes you get abdominal pain from high calcium. Generally what's done with this is it's a kind of a watchful waiting situation. They keep monitoring you and they don't remove your parathyroid glands unless you're reaching a threshold of very high calcium or you're having any one of those types of consequences and you would be doing better without your parathyroids.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Okay.
But the question is, is there anything natural to do? In some cases of hyperparathyroidism, actually vitamin D is helpful. That's a subtype of high calcium is related to low vitamin D. But conversely, too high vitamin D can cause high calcium.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful with vitamin D if you have the condition of hyperparathyroidism. But in terms of other, herbal or, diet, you have a tumor of your parathyroid glands, which sit on top of your thyroid, and these tiny glands are overproducing parathyroid hormone. And the way to treat that is removal, surgery.
Yeah. You could feel better, Paul. Okay. All right. Thank you for that question and best of health to you.
I think we have time for one more question. We could squeeze it in.
Okay, this actually comes from Malka. She's asking about Gemteza for overactive bladder. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla, a long time and very appreciative listener. I would like to hear your take on the relatively new medication for overactive bladder. My doctor claims that this new medication, Gemteza, which is Bibegron or Vibegron, does not cross the blood-brain barrier, and therefore I don't have to be concerned about the effects on cognitive, as was the problem with previous medications for overactive bladder, which I never took any of. The medication's been on the market for about 3 years now, but in my opinion, it's too short of a period to know what the long-term side effects are. What do you think?
Interesting question, because as this person correctly states, the use of these OAB medications, overactive bladder, mostly these are what are called anticholinergic medications. And anticholinergic medications can increase the risk of dementia. Not that much, but you've got about 1.5 times the likelihood of developing dementia if you take these drugs chronically. And these are the more old-fashioned drugs. So I guess this new medication is working on a different pathway that is not the pathway of the anticholinergic drugs that produce these side effects on the brain. Among the anticholinergic drugs are certain antihistamines. Antihistamines also have an anticholinergic effect. Generally, anticholinergic medications kind of dry you out. They can cause mouth dryness, eye dryness, and so
constipation
as well. But this medication relaxes the bladder. It is a selective beta blocker, I think. And it's a newish medication that just got approved a couple of years ago that, you know, I didn't know this, but I'll take the doctor's word on it because I think he's done some due diligence on it, that it doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier and that it is less likely to have brain effects.
Here it is. In here. Well, it says the more common side effects of this drug are bladder pain, bloody or cloudy urine, difficult burning or painful urination, a frequent urge to urinate, lower back or side pain.
Right. But I think those are related to its potential to work too well, you know, to cause inability to pee, which means that you retain a lot of urine. And that sets you up for bladder infection, I think. You know, that is my surmise. And that, you know, it sounds like, wow, the side effects of the medication are precisely the condition it's supposed to alleviate. You know, urinary frequency? No. I would imagine, you know, look, everything's got side effects, but that it might be worth a try to see if it helps to reduce urinary frequency.
Yeah. I would first encourage Malka, if you're a user of caffeine, coffees, teas, sodas, other soft drinks, energy drinks, I would implore you to give them up completely for about a month.
Right.
I've had this happen with my clients and it was life altering.
Yeah.
They no longer had overactive bladder.
So here's the question. Does decaf cause urinary frequency?
The acidity content might be something.
I think it does. I think it's a little bit of a bladder irritant. A little bit of a bladder. For people with sensitive bladders, I think it is. Yeah.
And be right. Okay. So, Malka, there you go. Best of luck to you. Let us know how it goes if you do decide to try it.
Yeah.
Or if you decide to give up caffeine, if you want to try that first, I would encourage you to try that first to see how you feel. If that makes a difference, but you're not just stopping it for a few days. You really want to stop it for a minimum of 3 weeks and just see how that works for you.
And just want to point out that what works for a lot of women is a restoration of the estrogen in that environment, okay? And you don't have to take a systemic estrogen with a pill or a patch. You could just apply a little bit of estrogen cream locally. To the urinary meatus, you know, the external, opening, in the vaginal area, and it actually can travel a little upstream to the bladder and rejuvenate the bladder so that the bladder has a more youthful functioning. And because it's pretty typical for women to have more urinary frequency after menopause due to loss of estrogen.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Okay.
All right. Want to remind everyone to email your questions to Q&A with Layla is questions@drhoffman.net. That is questions@drhoffman.net. We appreciate them. We want to wish you a wonderful, safe, joyful holiday season.
Ditto. Thanks, yeah. Layla, and all the best to you and your family. And
thank you, and you too.
We'll rejoin you at the top of the year. But an exciting year it will be on the health front. Really looking forward to some of the dramatic developments.
I am too.
We'll stay on mission.
Yep.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news, and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.
This is Layla Mudin, registered dietitian nutritionist. I maintain a private practice and see patients regularly. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone and telehealth consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.